640 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News special report. A massive underwater earthquake off the east coast of Russia spawned tsunami warnings for Alaska and Hawaii and watches for the U.S. west coast. It was an 8.7 magnitude quake. Japan's meteorological agency has issued a tsunami alert. CBS's Elizabeth Cook.
Tsunami waves reaching 1 to 3 meters above the tide level are possible along some coasts of Guam, Hawaii, and Japan. Now, this is all based on information from the U.S. tsunami warning systems.
CBS News Bay Area's Paul Hagen says that in approximately 4.5 hours from now,
the northwestern end of the Hawaiian island chain, the potential for the waves to be more than 3 meters. That's almost 10 feet taller than normal. Once the waves make their way through the big island of Hawaii and some of the more densely populated islands, Maui and Oahu, the waves more likely to be in the 1 to 2 meter range, but that's also still subject to recalculation as more data comes in.
CBS News special report. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Elton's back with the Pack. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from training camp in Green Bay, where the Packers are now practicing in pads. Center Elton Jenkins, who's been dealing with a back injury, is back on the field and says getting a pay raise is no longer an issue for now.
Right now, I'm not even thinking about that. It's more so just, you know, what I can do to help the team and just being present, you know what I'm saying, getting good with the offensive line, building chemistry with the quarterbacks and the offensive line.
Baseball. The Brewers with an 8-4 win over the Cubs last night. Home runs by Sal Frelick, Christian Yelich, and another for first baseman Andrew Vaughn. Now the Brewers making a trade, picking up catcher Danny Jansen in exchange for a minor league player. The 30-year-old Jansen has spent most of his career with the Blue Jays. He's originally from Wisconsin, where he played for Appleton West High School. Catcher Eric Haas has been designated for assignment. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You're listening to Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Had a moment the other day that just begged for a reality check at the rehab center I take my wife to. There I was. I'm rolling my wife's wheelchair up a sidewalk when I found myself behind another guy similarly pushing his wife in a wheelchair. Only this guy... This guy, I think he was auditioning for captain of the Olympic complaint team. Every four letter, 16 letter, every bit of FCC unfriendly language you could fathom coming out of this guy's mouth, basically cursing out the universe. Because shock of all shockers, pushing a wheelchair uphill, it's hard. I know, I've been doing it, and it's hard, it's harder if you don't have anyone to push you. And now understand, I'm not going to pretend like I don't have my days where I'm not thrilled or I'm grumbling or whatever. I'm not saying that, and nor would I ever. But what caught my eye about this guy, big truck. Like me, I've got a truck and, you know, I've got steps. My wife gets in and out of the truck with the steps that I put in place. I get it. But he parked front and center in the handicap spot. Now we park at all the way to the end of the parking lot so that someone who needs it can use it. Just how it is. And I don't begrudge anyone of taking the handicap spots. But again, what caught my attention was this guy's, you know, big pickup truck basically wrapped in Trump paraphernalia, big flag, the centerpiece of F. Biden and Kamala's, you know, definitely not poor based on the amount of money he had to spend on stickers. It was a rolling fanatic wagon. Subtle, very subtle, but hard to miss. And it's also hard to miss where this guy stands on big government. So me being me, because sometimes I'm, I don't know, sometimes I can be a little bit of a jerk, but you know, to make a point, because I do appreciate irony. I said to him, I go, yeah, you gotta love it for old George H.W. and the feds, man. Making our lives just a tad easier, thanks to that ADA. And he didn't give me a response. There was no, I was expecting a giant, you know, blank you. But that didn't come. He just gave me a look. But I think I did make his task a little easier because he did step it up. And the audible complaining that I was hearing just kind of turned into inaudible mumblings. Now, his wife looked at me. She smiled, a big smile. So it was one of those things where I don't know if she got it. I kind of think she did, or just a really nice person like my wife. My wife does that all the time. Whenever she's apologizing for me, it's always with, you know, sorry. But, you know, it was one of those things that just grabbed my attention. Because here, clearly, someone who is an anti-government person, benefiting from, you know, just a little bit of government legislation, and I didn't even get to talk about the prime parking spot his Patriot Mobile occupied. I didn't get that. Also, courtesy of that very same government that clearly, from the library, the rolling library, he hates. And you know, fun fact, every inch that he didn't have to muscle that chair over a curb or across traffic was paved by federal law. And interestingly enough, a federal law, brace yourself, that was signed by a Republican president. That's right, HW was a Republican. Well, today, not so much. But, you know, back when that crew sometimes did things occasionally for we the people. Not often, but sometimes. So if you're burning gas railing against government overreach, but still cashing in on the perks, maybe pause the outrage just in those brief moments when those evil regulations make your life a little bit less miserable. And look, like him, I know what he's going through. I feel his pain. I do. I understand the anger. But understand, you know, the Americans with Disability Act didn't fall from the free market tree. It wasn't bestowed on us by benevolence. People fought for it. I remember those days. People chained themselves to buses, got arrested, got dragged out of buildings, and forced Congress out of its stupor for just a moment to make sure that, well, he nor I had a heart attack breaking our, you know what's doing the work that we're doing. And it was 35 years ago. The ADA wasn't, again, handed down. It wasn't benevolence. It was fought for. It was pried out of the hands of lawmakers. Had they not done that, people would still be stuck at the bottom of the stairs. And since 1990, when this law was passed, it's meant more doors, literally and metaphorically, are opened for millions of people. Was it perfect? No, by no means was it perfect. Nothing government ever does is perfect, but hey, nothing corporate America does is perfect either. Not even close. But with this law, it meant millions of people weren't just shoved out of public life, so that everyone else could enjoy their freedom. And I'm sure before his wife ended up in that wheelchair, like mine, didn't give it much of a thought. But here we are. It's kind of like deja vu all over again. The same folks who love a reserved for disabilities parking spot, they're fighting tooth and nail to gut the ADA. They've already shrunk Medicaid, and, well, they're going after Social Security disability. And interestingly enough, they're the ones who also benefit. So I'm curious how my Trump-loving friend is going to respond when Medicaid gets gutted. I know during the 2015-2016 campaign, you had a lot of mocking of the disabled that's going on, and I guess we're back to that. But understand, without those burdensome regulations, it would be a lot harder for us to do the work that we're doing to help our spouses. And the thing that bothers me is every time I hear my government hater friends sobbing about red tape, I think about what it took to get those curb cutouts, the handicap access bathrooms, the handicap parking spaces, the sidewalk access that just recently in my life I've had to appreciate. Now imagine a lifetime of that. And that's where my mind goes. Imagine that's your reality. I hope, I pray we are working every day that my wife is not going to need any of that stuff in at some point down the road. But you know what? I'm glad it's there. And the angering part of all this is you've got the Republican Party pretty much lockstep in chipping away and doing away with burdensome regulations like the ADA. The Republicans and Republican-led states have been working overtime for years to chip away death of 1,000 paper cuts. And now you've got Trump, who's basically on a crusade to finish the job in the name of freedom or cutting the red tape. And what it really means, honestly, is you're going to make the lives of the disabled, of the people who are helping the disabled, you're going to make it a lot harder. And why? So big businesses and their rich donors don't have to bother thinking about us. Don't have to think about access. Don't have to think about fairness, basic human dignity, none of that. Because, you know, truth of the matter is they don't want to see those people. And just recently, we have become one of those people. Understand, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. The original ADA passed in 1990 was relentless activism. Relentless. Again, people chaining themselves to buses, dragged out of buildings, jailed, just to win the right to exist in public, to work, to be part of society like anybody else. And look, I give H.W. Bush the credit he deserves because he signed this. He put his name on it. There were Republicans that supported this, and they supported it for about 5 minutes. It was a nice press conference. Everyone got to feel better. Everybody got to pat each other on the back. It was big hugs until you actually had to do it. And then all we heard about is, well, you know, the compliance costs are way too expensive. And there are too many frivolous lawsuits because people are going, hey, we have this right. We have this law that's going to make our lives better. How do we get it? And it was one of those situations. I've watched this over the years because I have been a supporter in that world. They like to use the word ally. Okay. Because I understand bad things happen to people all the time. Any one of us is one idiot woman making a left-hand turn in front of you away from being in this situation. One illness. And if it comes, and I hope for you it never does, but if it does, don't you want that kind of access? And understand, you know, Republican states and Republicans for years have been trying to dilute enforcement because they want business off the hook. They're the business party. And anyone who asks for anything, they're just, well, they're gaming the system. And they always pick one of the most extreme situations. You know, I was thinking of this, you know, a moment ago. I was talking to a friend of mine who's blind. And I said, you know, I saw this story, you know, a couple of years ago. And he and I had talked about it at the time. And I wanted to refresh my memory of what he had said. And I go, there's a blind guy going to a movie theater. And he's suing because he wanted to have a description of the movie. Because evidently this is there. I didn't know it. But evidently, because of the ADA, there was if you go to a movie theater, they're supposed to give you like a headset, and you can listen to someone describe the scene as it's happening. I was like, that seems a bit excessive. And he's like, yeah, to you, because you can see it. And I'm like, yeah, good point. And I'm like, well, I wonder how much it costs. Not very much, evidently. And at the time when that story came out, it was painted as, look at this guy trying to make money off the system. And the reality is the guy was just going, hey, look, I want what the law affords me. And that's the ability to participate like anyone else. And in that moment, I went from, you know, thinking, wow, that's a bit excessive, to, yeah, it actually kind of does make sense. But now you've got an entire think tank world, Republican machine, a movement that spread like cancer in the names of reform and reform. And whenever you hear the word reform coming out of a Republican's mouth, in my view, it's always, yeah, screw those people. And in this case, it's just screw people with disabilities. Take the push for the ADA Education and Reform Act, House Resolution 620. I think this one was, they did it back during the Trump years, and I think it's back. What they want to do is make it harder, not easier, for the disabled to get actual justice. Like the guy saying, hey, I want to be able to have this this description. And you've got GOP states who have blocked this. The hurdles have been raised so people can't sue. They're dragging their feet on bringing buildings up to code. You name it. And more importantly, gutting the funding that goes into enforcement of these rules. It's one thing to have a law on the books. It's one thing to say, yes, you have the right to be able to get access to a building. It's another thing to find it, some way to enforce it. And if you got all the funding, kind of like they're doing to OSHA and all the other enforcement arms of our government, it's on paper. Good luck. And understand, you've got a chorus of Republican governors tripping over themselves, pledging support to Dear Leader for every one of his anti-equity moves, and ready to rubber stamp the policies that punch downward at the most marginalized in our country. Because the weird thing is, and you know, we talk about Christian Nation, and the people who talk about Christian Nation the most seem to be the ones who kick the poor, the disabled, the elderly, seem to be the ones who do it the worst. And look, you've got Trump, who's never seen a disability regulation he wasn't ready to nuke. And look, last time he was in office, the Department of Justice slashed 11 key ADA guidance documents. Quietly, of course. During the pandemic, during the chaos of the pandemic, they went and they made it harder for businesses, for schools, for hospitals to even know what access looked like for Americans who have disabilities. So if you want to take on your boss or the landlord or who knows, because they violated the ADA, good luck, buddy. Go ahead, go sue. I don't think you have enough money. I don't think you have enough time. And the system appears to be tilted against all of us. And here we are with another Trump government ready to swing the regulatory destruction wrecking ball, gutting rules, yanking guidance, encouraging Republican states to turn back the clock to the good old days where we just put those people in their place. And now you've got executive orders and all the budget gimmicks. They're literally clawing back billions in social spending. And thank you, Congress. You know, the Christians. And you've got Republican states ready to do the exact same thing. And understand, none of this is reform. It's class war. It's culture war. Pure and simple. And Trump and his allies are telling the disabled people to sit down, shut up, and don't count on the law. It's not going to help you. Basically saying, hey, if you're lucky enough, you'll get a parking spot. But don't you dare ask for more. And the irony is I go back to the guy with the mobile library, the Patriot Mobile. Those are the ones who count on those laws. And you know, he will be the first to howl when that ramp disappears, when that accessible restroom that we both use to help our spouses go to the bathroom, when that goes away, he'll be the first to complain. Because what we're in the middle of is a relentless campaign by Republicans, especially Trump, to shove the disabled out of public life, one regulation, one lawsuit, one cost-cutting stunt at a time. Question is, will you let them? Are you willing, ready, able to stand up, speak out, fight back? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You got a story like that? I also want to hear it. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I was looking at a Committee for a Responsible Budget report that pointed out that, guess what? Social Security is going to face a major cut if nothing's done. And guess what? It's going to be working people who end up footing the bill. They point out that potentially a 24% cut is coming in just several years. That could be for a couple over $18,000 a year in 2033. Also, Medicare, there's an 11% cutting as well. And you go, is this what we want? Is this what we need? Is this smart? Because understand, chopping Social Security benefits is not just a rotten idea. It's theft. It's bad policy. It's a disaster for working class people. And yeah, it's a gift wrap present for wrapped in red, white, and blue for our wealthy elite. But it also should be criminal. Understand, these are promises that were made to people that for their entire working lives. And look, clawing back Social Security benefits isn't just a numbers game. It's really a power play. To keep workers down, poor, and, well, scrambling, so corporate America and our billionaires can keep their wallets fat and do zero heavy lifting. And make no mistake about it, the working class is going to be the one that bleeds out over this. First off, Social Security isn't some crazy retirement plan you can fix by cutting benefits. It really is anti-poverty insurance. It's a social safety net for millions of people who rely on it to put food on the table, keep a roof over their head, pay medical bills. Understand, for way too many people, it's the difference between dignity and desperation, between paying the rent and being homeless. It's that lifeline that keeps disabled workers, survivors of tragedy, low-income retirees from abject poverty. So cutting benefits isn't fiscally responsible. It's the Republican response to gut the purchasing power of millions of people who actually keep this economy going. Understand, when Social Security recipients get their money, they spend it. When they have less money, what do? They buy less food, fewer clothes, skip medicines. Simple truth. Poor and struggling people don't hoard cash. Not like our billionaires. They spend every dime. And that goes into the local economy, especially Main Street. And look, our wealth class brethren, they love this. Because what weaker Social Security simply means they don't have to pay any more taxes. Corporate America can get away with it. These are people who have successfully dodged paying their taxes for decades, and yet we just gave them another handout. Our politicians, our political class, they keep Social Security underfunded. Why? So they can justify cutting it more. Because in order to save it, we got to kill it, right? So we've got the very wealthy sitting on piles of cash, hoarding. They've got all their tax loopholes, all their inherited wealth, all that stuff. And yet we're going to slash Granny's food budget? Look, understand, they don't want a robust, thriving working class that demands better wages, hours, conditions. They don't want that. They want desperate workers. Desperate workers grateful for crumbs, for what falls off the table. Why? Because, again, easier to exploit. For me, the thing that I love about Social Security is, yeah, it raises that floor. It's a progressive plan. And it was by design. Yes, it replaces a higher percentage of income for lower earners than hires. That's why they call it a redistributive program. And it should be. It is one of the very few government programs that actually fights inequality as opposed to, well, turbocharging it. And I believe we could make it even more progressive. And we should, and we must. Raise the cap. Scrap the cap. My view, scrap the cap entirely. Don't raise it. Scrap it. So that the Bezoses, the Musks, the rest of them pay Social Security tax on 100% of their income like every working person. Close their loopholes. Expand benefits for people. Include more types of work. Caregiving, for instance, something I've become somewhat acquainted with. Gig work as well. But the problem is most of that is done by women and people of color, and we don't seem to have any interest as a political class to do anything for those folks. So instead of cuts, what we should be demanding, and instead of status quo, what we should be demanding, strengthen, expand Social Security, increase benefits, especially for folks who are on the edge, and tie adjustments to real cost of living hikes, include health care, which I don't know if you've noticed, it's skyrocketing. We should be investing in this system so it can support a growing, aging population. Yeah, this guy. So if it means higher taxes on the very wealthy and corporate America, yeah, that makes sense. What doesn't make sense is slashing the benefits of hardworking retirees and people who've hit hard times. But when you hear politicians talk about saving Social Security by cutting it, recognize what their agenda is. Simple. Keep the wealthy wealthy and the poor and the working class struggling. We shouldn't be buying into this. Social Security is not an entitlement. It is a negotiated contract, a worker-backed insurance plan that protects all of us from sinking into abject poverty. And understand, trying to erode it isn't just bad economics. It's a moral failing. And from the people, oddly enough, from the people who tell us that they love the Jesus, it's quite remarkable. So we have to demand more, a more progressive system, a more redistributive system, one that works for, well, all of us, and one that makes sure that our commitments are met and that people don't go hungry. People like you, me. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, slight storm chance, and a low in the upper 60s. For tomorrow, a mixture of sunshine and clouds, still a chance of storms, heavy rain possible, highs low 70s. Sun's back for Thursday, and highs in the mid-70s. It's 82 right now.
Matt and Air on Air.
Kareen Hendrickson, you mentioned a conversation with Ron Johnson, Kareen, about the need for child care in Wisconsin. How did that go?
I said, why don't you think we should fund? And he goes, I think an elegant solution, it would be for moms like you to stay home so the other moms can go to work. And I said, well, and I shouldn't get paid for that? And he just kind of stared at us. And I said, that tells me all I need to know.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, for years I've been talking about how the right has, well, they've kind of staked their flag on, they're the party of religiosity. They're the godly party. And yet, the things that they do, questionable. You look at the one big beautiful nightmare bill that they passed, or as I was calling it, the anti-Jesus Robin Hood in reverse bill, where we literally made billionaires wealthier while kicking poor people even more. And you go, how did we get to this place? And it's one of those things that I've told my friends on the left, my progressive friends, my Democratic friends, my liberal friends, of hey, they're faith based groups on this side. There are religious people here. Why don't we hear more from them? And that's why when I found votecommongood.com and the folks over there, I said, we got to get some of those folks on to talk about the work that they do. And that's why I've asked Denise Murphy McGraw to come share some thoughts. She's the co-chair of Catholics Vote Common Good. Again, you can check out their website, votecommongood.com. Denise, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick. What a pleasure.
So let's start in the spot where I just said, no, look, the right has claimed ownership of God and of religion. They claim we're a Christian nation and we've got to follow whatever bizarre thought process they have. And it doesn't seem to be that balance. So when I found your group, I'm like, here's an opportunity to add some of that balance and some of that conscience that seems to be lost from our brethren on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you talk about it all the time on this show, and a lot of other progressive leaders talk about it, and it's a great concern, is the hollowness of the Republican Party's, you know, religious right, you know, their Christianity, you know, whatever that is that they seem to be bringing to Washington right now. I look at our vice president who claim, you know, is a newly minted Catholic, and they all claim to share those same values that I do. I don't know. I don't go to church with a lot of people who think it's okay to take away food programs from kids or healthcare programs from senior citizens. So, you know, there is a progressive left. They are a very faithful group. And especially within the Catholic community, it really, it speaks to how many of us were raised
right
with those Catholic social justice teachings that really talk about the issues that are so pertinent today.
Yeah, no, look, I say it all the time. I grew up in the 70s in the Catholic Church, and the focus, at least in our parish, was peace and social justice. You had, you know, priests walking picket lines. You did things to help the poor, even though we were in the poorest parish in the diocese. You did things to help each other, and yet somehow in my lifetime, that whole love thy neighbor, you know, heal the sick, take care of the poor, you know, feed the hungry, all of that stuff seems, at least if you look at what's going on in Washington, seems to have gone by the wayside.
Totally foreign to these guys. Totally foreign. You know, I love what you said. You know, we were raising money for poor people. We were poor, right? But as kids, we didn't know we were poor, right? Because we had a community. And because we were doing things like raising money for kids in Africa and making sure starving people ate. You know, that's just how we lived our lives in the 70s. You know, we had folk mass and guitars and, you know, we sang about these issues. So it weren't just something we were learning in school or at after school religion classes or at home. You know, these were just part of exactly who we were. Now, some people got away from it. And the right has done a tremendous job of driving a wedge, especially in the Catholic community, on abortion. And, you know, there are a lot of people who either, you know, they don't want any part, you know, they can't justify in their minds, you know, being pro-life and being pro-social justice. They're certainly not progressives. And they have sort of walked away from that and they've gone to that side. And then there are other people who have sort of walked away from the Catholic faith altogether because they are concerned there aren't enough people like us out there still, Rick, who really, they know how they were brought up. They know how they were raised. They vote that way. They live their lives that way. They write their checks to organizations that way. And, you know, we're here because we just, you know, we saw that real need over the last, you know, it's been for a very long time now, but for over the last 5 years or so, that Catholics and progressive Catholics who were raised like this are looking for a voice. No, and they know that voice is not J.D. Vance.
No, and it's really important to bring those people together and do the organizing. Because, look, there's a lot of things to be fixing. So when I found your group, Catholics for Common Good, and your mission, which is basically rooted in bridging faith and politics through basically common ideals, you know, I go, you know, how did you come to this? You know, what inspired you to get to doing this, and what keeps you motivated?
Sure. You know, keeping us motivated isn't the easiest thing in the world right now. But about 5 years ago, there were a bunch of Catholics all over the country who were working on, you know, trying to elect Joe Biden as the second Catholic president. That, you know, we formed a strong network all over the country. We were talking regularly. And when I say regularly, every couple of days in some sort of organizing event. We knew then that these kind of folks, you know, these Catholic mass goers in Pittsburgh and Philly and, you know, in Detroit and in just all over the country were going to be that secret weapon for Biden. And then he won. And, you know, we stayed connected, but everybody was saying, well, what are we going to do now? And we needed a more formal organization. You know, Catholics for Biden couldn't go on forever. And obviously it couldn't even go on for as long as we wanted it to. So we've hooked up with Vote Common Good, which is a very well-respected evangelical Christian organization that's been together for about 10 years now. They organize around the country, progressive evangelical Christians. And I just went to them to talk about getting some advice on how to set up an organization like this. I didn't know. And they said, well, come with us. We'll help you. Yeah. We'll help you set up your website and we'll help you set up, you know, everything's about getting your word out and sending out emails and things like that. You know, they provided the infrastructure to us. And I said, I couldn't have asked for anything more. They're just in the true spirit of that, like Christian support, collaboration. They took us in. And, you know, we've been going strong for the last 5 years now. It's really been terrific. We have just people from all over the country who get engaged, who want to talk about these issues. And obviously, you know, things like Zoom and webinars and things like that, you know, make the country a little smaller, and things that we probably couldn't have done 10, 15, 25 years ago in terms of national organizing, we can do pretty easily and pretty cost effectively now. We're all volunteers. And we're really just, you know, committed to the whole idea of getting together more like-minded people, more people who are committed to those Catholic social justice teachings, seeing a government that reflects that a little bit more and helping elect people who do care about that.
Yeah. For me, you know, it's amazing how even in this day, how politically we're divided we are, but religiously we're divided. And you think that, you know, the book is what it is. It's pretty straightforward. Love thy neighbor as thyself. There's a whole bunch of stuff in here. They go, yeah, this is, and I know my lefty friends like to say that, you know, Jesus was a, you know, hippie, liberal, socialist.
Yep.
But to be honest, a lot of the things that he talked about and pushed for kind of in the wheelhouse of what Democrats believe or claim to believe, and what I think we as working class folks should want. No?
Well, that's exactly it, Rick. You know, and it was how so many of us were raised that, you know, I grew up in a union household. My husband grew up in a union household. We saw firsthand the kind of life that organized labor and what organized labor means, and taking care of, you know, the least among us and everybody, you know, within the organization, and making sure that the workers get their fair share, and coming together collectively to do things. You know, that's how we lived, right? So, you know, our fathers and our mothers, you know, lived that, you know, 9 to 5, a Monday through Friday. And on the weekend, we went to church and we were, you know, we were hearing the gospel and we were hearing, you know, these kinds of lectures to us.
Yeah. The sermons were all about it. The sermons were all about, you know, again, back to peace and social justice.
Exactly.
So the question is, how did we get from that, you know, love thy neighbor and feed the poor and all of that, to hooray for me, God wants me to be rich, the whole prosperity gospel and all that? How did we make that as a country, that transition? And, well, how do we fix it?
God wants you to buy this Bible from me.
Yeah.
Right? There's no greater bastardization of the whole thing than that alone. But how did we get here? I just think the other side has done a better job of co-opting these folks, of convincing them that they're like them. I don't know who or what Catholic who grew up the same, you know, my age, grew up in the same world that you and I did, Rick, think that Donald Trump is like them. But hey, you know, we got to deal with the hand we're dealt here. And what we just try to do is continue to remind people of that we do need to take care of our neighbors, that we do need to ensure that children are eating, you know, that people aren't starving, that, you know, wars are just not how we want to perpetuate our policies and our world policies. And we just have to make sure that we take care of the least among us.
Yeah, no.
And that is what I am committed to every day of my life. And people find me from all over the country, whether they're, you know, nuns or they're just people who, you know, find me on social media or for a great opportunity like this. And they say, I didn't know anything like this existed. I felt like sort of an oddball at my parish.
So how can people get involved with what you do?
Right.
So how can people get involved with what you do? Because look, most of the, you know, some of my Catholic friends, you know, they're in churches where whether it's actually factual or just the perception is everyone's, you know, crazy Trumpers who are preaching this hooray for me and the heck with everybody else nonsense. How do you bring people in? How can people start doing what you're doing or organize? Because for me, religion should be that thing that brings us together, that lifts us up,
yeah,
that makes us want
exactly.
to be better people, not horrible people. And to me, one of the most disgraceful things that I saw during the whole One Big Beautiful Bill fight was a bunch of Republicans all in a huddle praying while they knew that they were taking
right, but
away.
But then they were going in and voting for that horrible, I know, destructive. I know. I want to answer your question a couple of different ways, because you've touched on something else that we on the left in the Democratic Party have not done a good enough job in reaching out to people of faith. That we just sort of don't understand it. Maybe we haven't had the resources as a party, or I should say the party hasn't had the resources to reach out to folks like us. And, you know, if we get you know, if we sit around and wait to get invited to the dance, well, you know, we're going to be pretty lonely on Friday and Saturday nights. So we have to be able to do the work on our own and continue to reach out to the DNC, to the organizers around the country, to other like-minded progressive groups, organized labor groups, to let them know that we even exist and that we have an organization, and that people around the country who do want to become a little bit more involved in this, they are Catholics, you know, who are raised in that social justice teaching and want to just do a little bit more and be with people who, and hear from speakers who are committed to that and help elect those kind of people who are going to bring that sensibility to government. Well, you are welcome in this organization. You don't have to pay anything. You don't have to do anything. But, you know, we're at CatholicsVoteCommonGood.com. We are there. You can find me. You can find my email address. I would love to have you get a little bit more involved. And I would love to, Rick, if I could just take 1 minute and just talk for a little bit about what we did last cycle, what we hope to do in the next cycle, so that people can feel like they really are making a difference. It's not just a group where they're going to get some emails and get hit up for money, because that's not really who we are. We really want to, you know, kind of put our money where our mouth is and do that kind of shoe leather, old-fashioned organizing. In 2020, you know, it was a different world. It was a pandemic. You know, we were doing regular phone banks. We were doing regular text banks. We were doing all sorts of outreach. We were identifying Catholic voters and reaching out to Catholic voters about the Biden-Harris ticket. Last year for Harris Walz, we really kind of upped our game and we were a little bit more organized and we were able to have like an independent organization. We did billboards in swing states. We were on the ground in swing states. We did thousands of postcards to Catholic voters, again, in those swing states. We really identified within the swing state world, you know, that we all know what those swing states are and those places that we were all watching on election night.
Right.
But in those states, in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, there is a high percentage of Catholic voters, white Catholic voters in particular. There's a lot of other organizations that target other Catholic voters, Voto Latino and others, you know, in New Mexico and Arizona. We did the Rust Belt Catholics. And I'll tell you, the response was tremendous.
So let me ask you, because, you know, when in talking, especially with the world that I know, which are, as I said, I grew up Catholic. Most of the people that I knew or know, their focus has been on abortion and, you know, same-sex marriage and a transgender issue.
The
culture war stuff that, you know, we're never going to get past, I don't think, at least in my lifetime. But, you know, for me, it was always that stuff that we grew up in, as we talked about a minute ago, taking care of the poor, taking care of the elderly, the imprisoned, all of that, the things that we were taught directly, Jesus was telling us to do. This other stuff, you know, whatever happened to, love the sinner but not the sin, and getting past it. How do you deal with that when you're talking when you're organizing? How do you deal with those issues? Because I got to imagine that's the first club you're hit with.
Absolutely. And you know, I said, you know, folks who are looking for something more and always kind of felt like the oddball at their parish, they have found me. Well, the other side has found me too, right? So anytime I'm in the newspaper or I'm on a show, you know, the other side finds me and tells me I'm going to hell. But, you know, I know differently. I know differently. You know, I know what the Beatitudes are. I know what the teachings we grew up with are. And I don't believe, you know, I haven't seen those passages in the Bible that go on and on and on about abortion or transgender or homosexuality. It talks about love. The Bible I read and, you know, and the sermons that I sit through talks about love.
Yeah,
and those homilies are never out there on all, you know, and not in my parish. I know in some parishes they are, but give me where those readings are.
No, then that's to me, that's the should be what the focus of religion is. And we should be calling out those people who are praying while they're literally taking food out of the mouths of children.
I know.
That's a struggle for me. So last question I've got for you. How do people find you? How do people get involved? How do maybe they start a chapter, do whatever it is that you're organizing around?
We would love to have people involved in any way they can, whether it's just that you're going to talk about us, you're going to get on a Zoom with us, or that you are going to organize Catholics in your area. You know, we give you the tools to be able to do that. You can find me anytime at CatholicsVoteCommonGood.com. We can get right back to you immediately. We'd love to have people who just want to learn more. We know that people don't go from, you know, watching a show or going to mass and then suddenly organizing people, but to learn more about the organization and to learn how you can get more involved and help really impact. I mean, we know what those House races are going to look like and those Senate races are going to look like next year. Yeah. And we know that to get involved at that grassroots level in that very targeted way makes a difference.
There you go. Denise Murphy-McGraw, I appreciate you taking time for us. Keep up the great work. Hope folks will check out your website, votecommongood.com. We'll get links out on social media. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Are you like me, tired of the right taking the religious high ground or claiming to take the religious high ground? Want to hear your thoughts? rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1956. That was the day that an oil tank explosion took the lives of 19 men fighting a fire at the Shamrock Oil and Gas Company in the northeast of Dumas, Texas. Dumas was in the Texas Panhandle, oil boom country. The day after the tragedy, the Chicago Daily Tribune carried the story of what happened. Four huge petroleum tanks exploded today, bathing 19 men in a super hot wall of flame and killing them in their tracks. The towering orange fireball of the first explosion was sighted in Amarillo, 40 miles away. The events that triggered the explosion started when a flammable gas caught flame and flared into a small ground fire at Shamrock. Employees and volunteer firefighters tried to stop the blaze. But despite their effort, the fire grew. Just before 7 in the morning, a 12,000-barrel tank exploded. This ignited another 20,000-barrel tank, and then two more. 15 of those fighting the fire died instantly. Four others later succumbed to their burns. Many more were injured. A news editor on the scene described what he saw, writing, quote, "A bright orange mushroom boiled up, floating in heavy black smoke, and I prayed those firefighters would get out alive, but some didn't." 8 who died were Shamrock employees. The other 11 were volunteer firefighters. Today, a memorial bearing their names pays tribute to those who died. An inscription reads, quote, "But whether on the plane so high or in the battle's van, the fittest place where man can die is where he dies for man." In 2015, 68 firefighters died while on the job protecting people and property throughout the United States. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Look, I've never been the preachy type. I've never been the outward religious type. I've not been the one to get up on the soapbox and do the whole, you know, hey, look at me thing. Look how religious I am. But, you know, the reality is, you know, the right has taken I'm not going to say the high ground. They've taken the flag. They've taken the messaging. The narrative is on their side. Because, look, more of them go to church. Partly because they've pushed a lot of people out with their intolerance. And the thing, you know, as a kid growing up, and much like Denise was talking about, you know, as I grew up, it was really all about peace and social justice. It was about love thy neighbor. It was part of your community. And it could have been just my experience being in a really poor parish, that was the focus because of who the audience was. But, you know, the Jesus that I learned about, you know, didn't turn people away. Invited people to come in and repent and go try and move towards a new life, but never turned them away. And it also shows, you know, the gospel also showed that, you know, Jesus hung around with the outcasts, those condemned by society, and didn't reject them. And this idea that, you know, Jesus wouldn't, the gay issue, I don't know. He was pretty radically inclusive because, you know, like I said, the lepers, the prostitutes, the poor, you know, heaven forbid. And, you know, and affirmed that people had value, had worth. And look, as a kid growing up in a place where I never thought I was going to live past 30, because there was violence and death and all kinds of stuff around us. You know, that idea that even I had value is kind of important. Again, may have just been the audience. May have just been, hey, you know, you're down here with the rabble. But this idea that what we saw Republicans do and what they've done for decades in slashing social safety net programs and you know, literally taking food out of children's mouths, that somehow that Jesus would be okay with that. No, I don't think so. Because most of, as I learned them, Jesus' teachings were about justice, about mercy, about compassion, especially for the outcasts, the poor, the needy, the oppressed. And as I remember, again, you know, Jesus challenged the power structures, you know, confronted unjust systems, both religious and political. And the politicians and that type, I think, you know, I remember one of the, and I don't know where it came out of, but, you know, whoever wants to be great has to be your servant. I forget exactly how it goes, but it's something along those lines that, yeah, if you want to be the leader, you should be at the back of the line first. But somehow we've gotten into this weird kind of world where we've kind of made an angry Jesus. Instead of talking about mercy and forgiveness and restorative justice and people having the ability to find forgiveness, you know, so much for blessed are the peacemaker. What we have is we have a religion in this moment where the narrative that I'm getting from my evangelical friends is basically hooray for me and the heck with everyone else. That, you know, 80s kind of the one who dies with the most toys wins. Yeah, but the problem is the one who dies with the most toys still's dead. You don't get to take it with you. And I go back to, you know, being a kid growing up in the Catholic Church and them talking about taking care of each other, being part of each other's lives. That's why I like group. That's why I was thrilled to meet Denise and the group work that they're doing to kind of bring religion back to some bit of sanity. Because, you know, I've always thought that it's odd that religion is something we fight over. Now, I know my friends are going to say, well, you know, more people have died in the name of God than anything else. And that's true. Religion has been that. That thing that we fight over, especially, you know, now where, you know, on the right, it's mostly evangelical Christians, where Democrats tend to be scattered all over different faiths, different ideologies, especially about religion. Same books, though, which is kind of strange. And yet you would think that the whole idea of religion is to bring people together, to make people better. To make people want to be better. And if you're working, you know, I have people that I know who are working to get to heaven. And I always say, you know, if you're working to get to heaven, you know, probably a good way to do that, do something nice for somebody. Be somebody that other people want to aspire to be, not people who take food out of the mouths of children. And I know I'm fixated on that. But we've used religion in this country in very, very twisted ways. And that's why I'm glad to see groups like Denise is doing the work of at least saying, hey, there's another way. I want to hear your thoughts. Am I wrong? Do you think that things are just fine in your community, in your church? Are things better, different, the same? I want to hear it. Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Thanks for being here. I'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Tsunami warning sirens sound in Honolulu as people are told to move to higher ground after an 8.7 magnitude earthquake off Russia's far eastern coast. Ben Gutierrez is with KGMB-TV in Honolulu.
We're looking at anything from maybe 3, 6, maybe even 9 feet, and a tsunami acts differently from a surf wave. A surf wave will come in and pull back out. Mm-hmm. A tsunami, because there's so much energy and it's been traveling across the ocean at about 500 to 700 miles per hour, it's going to start hitting the shoreline, slow down, start pushing up, and then all that energy is not just the top. It's going to be from top all the way to the bottom of the ocean, and that's going to continue pushing in and pushing in and pushing in.
A tsunami warning has been issued for parts of the Alaska Aleutian Islands and a watch for portions of the West Coast, including California, Oregon.